Y'all may be seated. I am Justice Bill Meyer, and you folks do the beam this morning. I'm your presiding justice this morning for your arguments. And we welcome all of you. And if your clerk will please call the case, we'll commence.
The court will now call North American Community Services versus Bosco. The mayor, please report. Mr. Jessica Bell Stanton, for the appellant. Mr. John Page, also for the applicant.
Counsel, are we ready to proceed?
Yes, ma'am.
Then go right ahead.
May it please the court. Your Honors, this case arises from the enforceability of an indemnity clause under the Texas anti-indemnity oil field statutory provisions. I'm not going to spend a great deal of time going through the different underlying details in terms of the personal injury suit that triggered the lawsuit itself, but there are some facts that bear noting and that are undisputed. The first fact is that there is a master service work agreement, the MSA, that is entered into between Bobco as the company and North American Tubular as the contractor. And as we see often in these oil field contracts, there are oftentimes a provision for indemnification as well as for insurance. It's particularly important if Texas law applies because of the safe harbor savings provision. But this case, Your Honors, arises from actions that occurred in New Mexico, a New Mexico site with a personal injury wrongful death lawsuit filed under New Mexico law, with Bobco seeking defense and indemnification in the tort lawsuit under New Mexico tort law, and the genesis and the basis of the declaratory judgment that was filed, that was sought by Bobco and ultimately entered by the trial court, arises from the belief that the place of the contract, the place where the pocket is located, is the location of the place of performance for purposes of interpreting the contract itself. Now, there's no dispute that the parties entered into the agreement in the state of Texas. That fact is clear in the record. The fact is also clear in the record that both of these companies are indeed domiciled in the state of Texas. You're not going to hear any creative argumentation from North American that would remove those very clear facts from application. But another key fact for application is that if New Mexico law applies, the inquiry ends. If New Mexico law applies, there is no way that this agreement, its indemnity, or its insurance provisions can be enforced in the underlying action. Bobco won the race to the courthouse after tendering for defense and indemnification in the New Mexico proceeding. Bobco filed its declaratory judgment action in Tarrant County, and North American Tubular filed theirs about 2 months later in the New Mexico action directly. Now, the New Mexico action, the court denied the motion to intervene on procedural grounds, and everything moved forward in the state of Texas with North American not contesting the jurisdiction of Texas, but whether the application of the law of Texas should apply to the defense and indemnification demand. Now, again, in the footnotes in the briefs, throughout the argument of the briefs, and in the summary judgment upon which this appeal has arisen, everyone agrees that New Mexico prohibits this agreement, and for different basis than what the Texas legislature enunciated for purposes of Section 127.
How many different work sites did this agreement cover with regard to y'all's relationship?
Your Honor, there is no limitation in terms of the number of work sites. It's contemplated that there would be multiple throughout multiple states.
Okay, you don't know, and is there anywhere in the record that indicates what other work was being done, or was this contract entered into immediately before the New Mexico well site was being worked, and that was the only one that was being worked?
Well, Your Honor, to split the answer in part. This was the incident itself in New Mexico and the drilling in New Mexico was occurring shortly after this contract was entered into in January of 2016. It's my understanding that was the only well that was being operated that the work was being performed on at that time was in New Mexico.
Okay, so you entered into a contract knowing full well that all of the indemnity provisions, according to New Mexico law, if in fact that was the intent of the parties that New Mexico law would apply, voided every aspect of that. And that, so, almost slightly sounds like fraudulent inducement, but.
No, Your Honor, I believe all the parties agree that the work anticipated was not going to be limited to a particular state. It was intended, and again, that would be a fact question that was raised in the context of the summary judgment below that we weren't allowed to pursue because the court determined as a matter of law, Texas law applied.
You see my question, though. What's the point of putting in very detailed and specific terms if, in fact, all the parties understood and intended at the time they put them in that they were void?
Your Honor, again, I think that goes to the premise of the question itself, and that was that the work was not going to be performed solely in the state of New Mexico. And the reason that we know this is because even under Section 6 of the agreement itself, Section 6 contemplates a circumstance where it says if the work is being performed in the state of Texas, then Section 127 applies. Well, now, the only way that that would have any meaning is that there is a contemplation that other locations, undefined, agreed, but that there be other locations where it might be prohibited or the work could be conducted in the state of Texas, which would trigger that provision. There's no reason to have the, unless performed in the state of Texas, we will apply Section 127 if it was always going to be applied or if it was never intended to be applied. In order to give meaning to that phrase and in order to read all of the provisions in context, not only Section 6 of the agreement, but also Section 8.A, which forms the basis of the declaratory judgment that was entered below, but also the insurance provisions in paragraph 9, according to BOBCO, that entire inquiry ends with Section 30 that says the jurisdiction of the state of Texas applies to this agreement. And that is not the first time that we have contracts, particularly service contracts, particularly oil field or water contracts, where there are multiple situs contemplated for the performance of that work. This contract by no means limited the location. And in additional evidence of that, in the language and express contractual provisions themselves, is the caveat that if it is performed in Texas, which it was not under these facts, if it's performed in the state of Texas, then Section 127 would apply, and we would look to whether the savings provision or the safe harbor provision would be triggered. Under Section 9, in each of the different categories regarding the insurance obligations, it contemplates that the jurisdiction of whatever state the service is being performed in is the jurisdiction that would govern. It says, unless prohibited by the law where the work is being performed. And again, all of this circles back to the contemplation that it was where the work is to be performed. Both sides, all terms, courts did.
So what's your position with regard to that parenthetical, that it modifies and qualifies indemnity obligations, or it modifies and qualifies the additional insured term?
Your Honor, both. It expressly qualifies the indemnity obligations. And by application, when you look at New Mexico law, which ties together both indemnity and the insurance obligations, New Mexico combines those together. It says whether a foreign or domestic contract involves insurance or indemnity, New Mexico contemplates the impact being the same. Now, I understand that those parentheticals involve it being an additional insured status, that's sections B and D of Section 9. But again, that's the very same safe harbor that BOBCO is relying on. It's essentially BOBCO has to agree that only the insurance provision and the indemnity connection to that insurance provision is the only thing that they could hold on to. If there is not insurance that would cover the indemnity, then it is void and unenforceable. And so, Your Honor, to answer that question more from a forward-looking position, under Section 9, there is no insurance that applies to this case because of the incident occurring in New Mexico, because of New Mexico tort law, and because the New Mexico statute says that it has, and it actually uses the phrase, a fundamental policy in making sure every person that is out on that oil field or that water well takes responsibility for safety. Contrast that a little bit with the Texas legislature's purpose in being that there not be unequal bargaining power between a larger company and a smaller company. Both important policy interests, one of which being fundamental to the progression, the protection of a state in which we have the personal injury wrongful death suit, New Mexico. So, Your Honors, if there is no insurance provision that can apply, there can be no safe harbor for indemnity. If indemnity is limited to the scope of the applicable insurance, the inquiry ends.
So this insurance policy, then, when you go out, it is just a piecemeal. You just never know where it applies, which state it applies to, and so I don't know what your premium determination for this kind of policy is, but that's essentially your contention of what this policy looks like.
It is, Your Honor, because Section 9 specifically notes that there will be some locations where these insurance provisions do not apply. The parties to the contract realize that despite the enacting of the agreement and despite whatever insurance is held, there will be occasions when the insurance simply doesn't apply. And again, Your Honors, all of that contemplates that the lower court was correct in applying Texas law at all. Even under Texas law, this agreement and these provisions are null and void because there is no insurance that would address the indemnity provisions. And again, the existence of Section 6 in the agreement where it actually notes if this is being performed in the state of Texas, then it is intended that Section 127 apply and it is therefore incorporated herein. Again, that indicates that the intent of the parties wasn't that that was always going to apply, that there were going to be other jurisdictions. As noted at the beginning, if we apply New Mexico law, then the inquiry is over. So in order to determine whether the lower court correctly applied Texas law initially, and then in that application of Texas law reached the proper conclusion as a secondary inquiry, all of the analysis.
Well, let's take a look at Section 6. And how is it possible to read Section 6 as contemplating that indemnity will be void? Because it specifically talks about only limiting it with regard to not being in excess of what's allowed under the law for indemnity. Okay? And I'm guessing your argument is that when it's void, then any is in excess. But that's not actually what's being contemplated there. That's being contemplated that there will, in fact, be indemnity and that it will conform to what the state law is. Contracts use is prohibited in the jurisdiction in Section 9. It doesn't do that over in Section 6. So how am I to conclude that, in fact, a prohibition and a voidness with regard to the indemnity agreements, which is specifically addressed in Section 6, was actually contemplated by the parties when this thing was signed?
You know, for two reasons. First, because in order to give meaning to the provisions, we have to give meaning to all of them. I agree we need to read them all in context. We know that the parties contemplated a circumstance under confirmation conforming to law that if it is determined that the indemnities or insurance exceed the maximum limits under applicable law. In New Mexico, anything over zero exceeds. And in order to save that,
Over in Section 9, it specifically said, unless prohibited by law in the jurisdiction where work is performed. So the language with regard to specific prohibitions, i.e. voiding things, is discussed on specific aspects of insurance that's not discussed with regard to Section 6 as to conforming to the laws.
Well, and Your Honor, I think the disconnect here is that those provisions, while whether it is applicable to the case as far as the factual application, it is indicative of the intent of the parties that this would be performed in locations other than the state of Texas. And furthermore, that if it's performed in states outside of Texas, that you would look to the jurisdiction of that state and then revert back to whether the indemnity itself could be adhered to. I do believe it's important to make an important distinction in terms of if Texas law applies. If it's determined that Texas's obligation regarding unequal bargaining power is indeed the superior material interest over New Mexico's protection for individuals and the execution of responsibilities regarding negligence, gross negligence, and just general protection and safety for the employees. If we get there, if we apply Texas law to that, it has been determined that the site and place of performance, which in this case not only is the location of the well, but also is the location of the suit.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Justice Simmons, welcome to the Court. Sitting with me at council table is Joe Greenhill, and he's here to answer any hard questions that you might have, so I brought him along. I'm concerned that we might have the cart before the horse here. Before you even get to some of these questions that regarding the meaning of Section 6 and Section 9, we've got to determine whether Texas law applies, and of course we believe it does. 10 years ago, the Texas Supreme Court, in the Sonat Exploration versus Coud case, stated, and I quote, "When a contract involves oil field work in many states, sophisticated parties should generally be free to designate the law that will govern their relationship and have that choice respected." And the principal question presented here this morning is whether the choice that these two sophisticated oil field companies made here, two Texas oil field companies, to have Texas law govern their agreement is substantially outweighed by New Mexico, the interest in New Mexico, a state which has a law that would, it's undisputed, would invalidate the indemnity agreement here. And to answer that question in New Mexico's favor, the court must find that all three of the following statements are true. First, in the absence of the choice of law provision, New Mexico law would apply because New Mexico has a more substantial relationship with the parties in the contract than does Texas with respect to the indemnity issue. Second, New Mexico has a materially greater interest than Texas in deciding that issue. And third, the application of Texas law would violate or frustrate or thwart a fundamental policy of New Mexico. We, of course, submit that none of these statements are true, much less all three, and that the trial court was bound to apply Texas law in accordance with the party's choice. And, of course, we also believe Texas, under Texas law, the agreement is valid and enforceable. With respect to the first determination, just very briefly, regarding the significant relationship each state has, Texas clearly has the edge. Domicile, negotiation, and execution of the contract, all of those are in Texas' corner on the undisputed facts. And of those three contacts, the one that is the most important and is entitled to the most significant weight under Comment C of Restatement Section 188 and the cases that we've cited that discuss that comment, domicile of the parties is the most significant because Texas has the greatest interest in protecting the parties' freedom of contract and their justifiable expectations. The only contact factor that North American hangs its hat on his place of performance. And it also happens to be the most problematic for us. When we briefed this case, we felt very strongly that that factor weighed in Texas's favor. But with the benefit of hindsight and further study, I think it probably does weigh more in favor than New Mexico than Texas. I mean, if you just look at the indemnity issue itself, which is what you must look at according to the court, the Supreme Court in Hughes Woods Product, the particular issue to be decided, there's no doubt that New Mexico is where the indemnity obligation for the most part will be performed, where Bobco's defense will be funded by North American. We do believe, however, that the indemnity obligation is at least partially performed here in Texas, because that's where payment of the indemnity will be made in the event judgment is taken against Bobco or a settlement is reached where monies are paid, and payment of Bobco's attorney's fees for the defense of Bobco in New Mexico is being paid from Texas. And those are facts that that Justice Brister in the Chesapeake case, when he was on the 14th Court of Appeals, took into account in weighing the contacts in that case. But what's, I think, more important here for us, anyway, is that whether Texas wins, loses, or draws on the place of performance, it's really of no consequence because, again, according to the Supreme Court in the Sonat expiration case, that factor is only to be given under Maxis and Restatement 196, is only to be given special weight in the event where you have a contract that has no choice of law provision and one that is a single state performance type contract where the parties only contemplate work would be performed in one state.
What is the point then of making a specific term with regard to the application of Texas law in Section 6, if the choice of law provision in Section 30 would automatically apply? Why make a distinction about work in Texas being covered by a specific statute in Texas if that's taken care of by the general discussion of an application of Texas law in Section 30?
Your Honor, that's a very good question, and I don't know that I have an answer for that. For me to answer that, I'd have to get into the subjective intent of the parties that they did not express in the written document in the four corners of the agreement. My best guess would be that they were just simply trying to make sure that when work is performed in Texas, there's no doubt that it comes within the purview of the statute. But it's that if that was the purpose, which it seems to be, that would be a plausible explanation. It's entirely consistent with Section 30, where they chose Texas law to apply to the agreement, including Section 6 and any other part of the agreement. That's the best answer I know, but I do know that if you read into that provision that the parties contemplated that another state's law would apply to the indemnity provision, you have to rewrite the contract, because that's not what the contract says. Let me just also, a word on location of the personal injury suit that North American has made an issue about as being a factor. There's a 2008 decision by the New Mexico Supreme Court that neither party cited, and I just want to bring it to the court's attention as instructive on this point. It's Farrell versus Allstate, and we've included it in the bench book under tab H. In that case, the Supreme Court in Mexico held that the contacts analysis under 188 should proceed on an issue by issue basis, and quote, one issue may be resolved under the law of one jurisdiction while another issue may be resolved under the law of another jurisdiction. So even under New Mexico law, the indemnity issue may be resolved by a court other than the court that is trying the personal injury lawsuit, which is entirely consistent with the Supreme Court's decisions that we've cited that tell courts that they must, when evaluating conflict of laws. They must focus on the particular issue to be decided. And speaking of different courts, this race to the courthouse notion, it's just one of several false narratives that run through North American's brief in this case. North American did not file this lawsuit until 5 months after the accident, 1 month after the lawsuit was filed in New Mexico, and nearly a month after North American ignored Bobco's written demand for indemnity and defense in the then existing New Mexico lawsuit. North American didn't file its motion to intervene, which it says we rushed the courthouse to head off, until 3 months after we filed the lawsuit here in Tarrant County, Texas. And we filed here because Section 30 states that the agreement shall be subject to the jurisdiction of the state of Texas. I don't know whether that is a standard form selection clause or not, but we filed here in good faith compliance with that provision. And there's never been a challenge to the jurisdiction of this court, the trial court. There's never been a challenge to the trial court's venue. Race to the courthouse, I don't think so. Okay.
Mr. Casey, if there was a race to the courthouse, in terms of our recent sporting event, and this that's rather significant, how many links do you think your client won by?
Well, I think we did pretty well. Now, I will say this, and this is only noted in, I think, footnote 3 of North American's brief, that there are some other lawsuits that have been filed by the other defendants in Texas, but in a different county out west, I believe in Big Spring County. So we're not the only one that believed, the only defendant in this case that believed that Texas was the proper place to file these deck actions to determine the validity of the indemnity issue.
Is there an explanation you're aware of in the appellant's brief as to why there was that length of time passed before they took action?
No, Your Honor. And the trial court in New Mexico denied that motion to intervene. I think it was brought out in the briefs. I do think it's interesting that the court with charge of the responsibility for presiding over the personal injury suit and fairly and justly applying New Mexico law was not persuaded that New Mexico's interest in the indemnity issue was compelling enough that it should allow that issue to be brought into New Mexico court and not tried here in Texas. That kind of brings me to the other determination that I wanted to just speak briefly about, and that's whether New Mexico has a materially greater interest than Texas in the deciding the indemnity issue. We don't disagree that New Mexico has an interest in deciding the issue to further its public policy, but that's the question is not whether New Mexico has an interest in that issue. It's whether New Mexico's interest is materially greater than Texas. And contrary to North American's argument, the simple fact that New Mexico has a public policy, which is a good and noble policy, promoting workplace safety by avoiding oil field indemnity agreements, is not enough to overcome that materially greater hurdle. In the DeSantis opinion of the Texas Supreme Court, as well as the most recent decision of that court on a conflicts of law analysis, Exxon Mobil versus Drennan, there are other considerations that must be taken into account. One is the contacts of the parties to the state, which is very similar to the significant contacts issue. and the interest the state has in protecting the justifiable expectations of the party. And when those considerations are taken into account, New Mexico's interest in voiding this agreement of two foreign Texas companies is relatively minuscule compared to Texas. Again, what we have here is two sophisticated Texas-based oilfield companies who regularly do business in the Permian Basin area on both sides of the borders. As counsel stated, this is a multi-state contract, and both parties agreed that Texas law would apply. But what I want you to keep in mind, the parties explicitly drafted the indemnity agreement and purchased insurance in support of that agreement to meet Texas law. Unless North American was crossing its fingers behind its back when it negotiated and signed this agreement, neither party contemplated that New Mexico would apply. Very briefly, with whatever few seconds I may have, let me just touch on why this agreement's valid under Texas law. The last, and when it comes to the unless prohibited by law provision in Section 9, the last antecedent rule, which we alluded to but didn't cite authority for, and there is a case just out of the Supreme Court, Perryman, that talks about the last antecedent rule. Under the last antecedent rule, a parenthetical phrase like this only modifies the language immediately preceding it, not any language beyond that. And the only thing immediately preceding this provision, unless prohibited by law, was the additional insured provision, which under Getty Oil is separate from the insurance and indemnity agreement and is not governed by the anti-indemnity statute of Texas. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court. Your Honors, I actually want to begin where BOPCO also began their argument, and that is with the case of the Sonat versus Cudd Supreme Court case, because in that case, the court determined that Louisiana, not Texas, but that Louisiana law would apply, because that was the location of not only where the incident, the drilling was occurring, but it was also the situs of where those provisions were to be enforced in the context of the underlying suit. And, Your Honors, that also goes back to the Chesapeake case. The reliance of BOPCO throughout its briefing, although it doesn't mention it as much today in oral argument, it's probably because the Chesapeake Court, as counsel concedes, determines that the place of performance, if we look to the place of performance, which the Supreme Court stated in Maxis, in Sonat, and in DeSantis, if we look at the place of performance as not only the location where the incident, the drilling was occurring, but the location where the defense and indemnification is sought. We're back at the very beginning of oral argument today, where the question is whether the pocket to receive the indemnity funds is the place of performance, as compared to the tort laws where the defense and indemnification is to be triggered. Counsel agrees today that after reviewing this case law, that answer weighs in favor of New Mexico.
Let me ask you something.
Yes,
why are we fighting over general liability insurance as opposed to the workers' comp insurance that the requirement, the insurance required you to pay for, and identified BOPCO as the statutory employer for purposes of any workers' comp? This is, I know under Texas law, the gross negligence allegations would take it outside of Texas workers' compensation law. I'm assuming New Mexico does the same, but the general liability policy wouldn't cover gross negligence anyway. So why are we fighting over general liability?
Your Honor, because the workers' compensation coverage prohibited by the state of New Mexico doesn't operate to protect BOPCO in the underlying suit. And again, those are determinations that are being made under New Mexico tort law and statutory law. North American wasn't a party to the Galvin lawsuit. And in fact, Your Honor, that does remind me about the brief mention of the other cases filed in Texas. It wasn't that all of the other contractors also agreed. It was after the declaratory judgment action was granted, and the parties all agreed to be bound by the appellate determination of whether this contract is to be is enforceable, whether it is to be viewed under Texas law or New Mexico law.
So you're just to make sure, the comp insurance is outlawed by New Mexico as well?
Your Honor, the comp insurance provision isn't one that was triggered by purposes of the appeal. That parenthetical of unless prohibited by law.
Well, the reason I'm asking for it is because it does talk about the applicability of workers' comp law in other states.
It does, Your Honor. And
the limits are the same with regard to the comp as to the general liability.
Yes, Your Honor.
So if we're looking at the entire insurance contract, that might be of interest with regard to reading it.
Well, in terms of coverage in the underlying action and immunity defenses that might be available in the tort action, but as far as the insurance provisions themselves are concerned, Your Honor, New Mexico, there are exclusions under workers' compensation depending upon the definition of the statutory employer. I believe it's in New Mexico Section 51. So
New Mexico is so concerned about safety with regard to their employees in New Mexico, they basically are making it impossible for anybody to do any work in New Mexico and have those individuals have a basis for recovery against anybody. That's basically what you're telling me.
No, Your Honor. The workers' compensation would still apply to the employer, but BOPCO it falls outside that parameter. The issue is not one of whether there's an opportunity to work in the state of New Mexico, as much as it is that people have to be responsible for their own actions, and the location of the domicile, which is the only factor that still remains after oral argument today. The location of the contract itself would not fulfill any of those obligations.
Counselor, your time is up, but I want to ask you a question about this contract in terms of the intention of the parties. That's one thing we need to look at, as you mentioned in your opening argument. And so is it your position that in February of 2016, when this document was being negotiated and signed in that month, that your client would have us to interpret the contract in terms of paragraph 30 as saying it's subject to Texas law, however, if you're working in a different state, we're going to look at that state's law in terms of indemnity and insurance, and that the sophisticated people who drafted and put this contract together for two very sophisticated companies would have us write in additional words to get to the position that you're taking.
No, Your Honor, that isn't the position of North American. In fact, there's a reason why we didn't challenge the jurisdictional venue. We believe that there's jurisdiction, but applying the jurisdiction of the state of Texas includes determining what state of law, which law applies. The contract, Your Honor, includes reference to other states. You don't have to read anything into it. You don't have to add any other language to it. But, Your Honor, if there is a question on that front, then this case must be reversed and remanded, because that would be a fact question upon which summary judgment could not have been granted.
Thank you for answering our questions and your argument. Counsel, thank you for your enlightening argument and briefing. And your case is submitted, and thank you for coming today. So we have one other case to deal with, but it has no oral argument, so Mr. Clerk,
all right,
call us out.
Thank you.
Now stands adjourned.
Thank you.